T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hour number 3, Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio WEEI, ALCS Game 1, Saturday night at Fenway Park. The Boston Red Sox and the Houston Astros. And joining us on the line right now is the first Major League player in baseball history to hit for the cycle in a playoff game. Brock Holt is on the line. Brock, how are you?
Good, good. How are you guys?
We're doing great, good. Thank you. Hey, congratulations, first of all, on doing something no one has ever done before. Did you feel like you were maybe beating up on poor Austin Romine a little bit?
No, I mean, that's a tough spot to be in as any position player. As I almost just getting a wreck going to the field, someone tried to pull out in front of me.
Oh, no.
That's a tough spot to be in as a position player. I'm sure they came to him. And he's like, hey, whatever I got to do to save the bullpen. But, you know, kind of as a position player, you don't really like facing position players because everyone expects you to get a hit off of them. And they're actually, you know, kind of difficult to do that against because we all say they throw below the hitting speed. So, but also you kind of know what you're going to get. So, you know, and I needed a home run. I'm like, I got to at least try here. So, was able to do it. And, you know, that's why you saw the dugout go as crazy as they did, because we were all talking about it before the at-bat. So it was a pretty cool moment for sure.
Now, so you hit for the cycle, you go up 2-1 in the series, and yet game 4 comes rolling around and you're not in the lineup. And Alex Cora, he has already said how he talked to you and you were okay with it. But how does that all happen? What time does he call you? Did you kind of expect it to happen? What was going through your mind there?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, you know, I figured I would get in there at some point. You know, so I thought maybe game 3 I would play early on. And then, he told me the off day we had before game 3, hey, you're going to be in there tomorrow. So, I figured that. I was like, I'm probably not playing game 4 because CeCe's throwing. So, I already kind of figured, you go out and you have a big night like that. But, you know, we've been doing it the same the whole year, and it's been working. So, all of our guys, 1 through 25 in the roster, can go out and help us win. And that's kind of how we've been rolling, the whole year. So, I was expecting kind of not to play. He called me that morning and said, hey, we're going to go with the righties because CeCe's throwing. But just be ready. Just be ready. So, that's our job. You know, if we're not in there to start, you know, be ready to come in if need be. And it's just one of those things where, you know, you have a good night, but we've got a lot of other good players. So plug them in and they did their job and, you know, we won the series. So, it just goes to show you how deep we are.
Alex has used the term all in. He used it when he said he talked to you about not playing the next night. He said the same thing happened when he called Rick Porcello and told him Christian Vasquez was going to catch, even though Vasquez hadn't caught Porcello at all this year. The term all in is what he used. Is that what you're sensing in that clubhouse as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every guy is rooting for every other guy. I mean, we're all trying to do the same thing. It doesn't matter who's playing or who's sitting or what. And right now that everyone's like you said, all in and everyone's doing their jobs. And, you know, Vasquez had a great couple games behind the plate, obviously. And offensively as well. And, you know, Sandy did his job the first two games. He caught his ass off the first two games, made some huge blocks, saved some runs. And, you know, it's everybody in right now, and we're all kind of pulling on the same rope and rooting for each other. And, things are going well right now. So hopefully we can use that going into this next series.
What's going on in the dugout, bottom of the ninth, game 4? You know, Kimbrel trying to hold on. Obviously some runs score, a lot of guys on base. Are you guys talking to each other? Are you yelling out onto the field? Is it quiet? What's going on there?
I think everyone kind of does their own thing. I had been in the in the kind of the, there's a little cage area underneath the dugout. The whole game while we were on defense, just kind of trying to stay loose, you know, hitting a little bit, just staying trying to stay ready. So I started the ninth inning out in the dugout, and then I realized, like, what am I doing? You know, I've been down in the cage the whole game, so I got to get back down there. We've been doing good. So I went back down there. So I wasn't in the dugout. And then JD was down there with me, and we were back and forth. We went into the video room, and we sat, and then something bad would happen. So then we'd go back to the cage, and then, you know, I'd go inside the cage, and something good would happen. I'd come out, and JD'd be like, what are you doing, bro? I'd go back in the cage. So, bunch of superstitious stuff going on. We're trying to find a good seat. We're trying to stay, like JD said in his post-game interview, we're trying to find the good juju.
Yeah.
And luckily we found just good enough of the juju, and we ended up holding on. We got the 27th out, and, you know, that's the goal, is to get that last 27th out with more runs than the other team. So a little dicey there, and, you know, I thought it was pretty funny what Kimbrel said after the game, you know, what people were saying. And they told me that next time I can just get a 1-2-3 inning. So, you know, I think everyone could breathe a sigh of relief at the end of the game. And, you know, we did what we had to do to win.
You sat in the studio with us at Fenway Park for the Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon, along with your teammate David Price. And you told us that you think David Price is misunderstood in this town. After his Game 2 performance in the ALDS, many Red Sox fans had sort of said, I don't need to see David Price anymore. He's going to start Game 2 of the ALCS. What will the reaction be in your clubhouse to that?
Excitement. We want him on the mound. And I really feel like he's going to, you know, he's gonna go out and throw the ball like he's capable of throwing. I don't think there's any guy in the clubhouse that's worried about David Price pitching. We want him to throw the ball. He's a huge part of why we've been so good, and he's gonna be a huge part of why we get to where we want to be at the end.
You have any idea why he's had so much success in the regular season and then he's struggled in the playoffs, regardless of what team he's been on?
No, I mean, I honestly don't know. You know, it's, you know, everyone's different. But no, I mean, the success that he's had throughout his career in the regular season, it's going to translate into the postseason one of these times. And, you know, we have all the faith in him as a starting pitcher. And like I said, we want him to have the ball. And, you know, we're excited about him getting the ball in Game 2.
These are the two best teams in baseball meeting in the ALCS, your team and the Houston Astros. This year you lost the season series to them. I think they took four out of the seven, something like that. It was 4-3. As you prepare to take this team on, what kind of opponent are you looking at?
Like you said, I mean, that's kind of way you want it. Best two teams in baseball going at it to go to the World Series. We know that they're a really talented team, obviously offensively, defensively, can pitch the ball. Their starting rotation was, you know, was the best in baseball. So, you know, we've got our work cut out for us, but, you know, we feel like we're right up there with them. And like you said, the two best teams in baseball, we're excited about the series, and we got to get to work and play good baseball to beat them.
You're 3-for-10 lifetime against Justin Verlander. Do you expect to start Game 1?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it, and AC will let us know what he's thinking and you know, which direction we're going. So, you know, I don't know. Obviously, I want to play every game I can, but like I said, we're all trying to do the same thing. So whatever you know, whatever AC feels like is the best way to go, then that's the way we'll go, and we'll roll with it. But we've got a lot of good players, so, you know, whoever he puts out there, we're going to have a good chance to win.
You've played a number of positions this year. At this stage, going into the ALCS, are you primarily a second baseman now? Is that the only place you'll be playing?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there will be, you know, other spots, you know, given certain situations. If something happens or God forbid, people get hurt or anything like that, but – you know, I'm sure I might play. You know, we're hoping Mitch Moreland's going to be, you know, be all right, and he's going to be able to play some first. So, you know, I might mix in at first every now and then. But yeah, I mean, I'm just going to play wherever I'm told to play. So, you know, wherever that might be is, you know, I'm happy with. So, you know, like I said, we're all in it together, and wherever I need to play to feel like, you know, we have the best chance, then that's what I'll do.
Alex Cora has told us before about how difficult it is to pinch hit. You know, it's just not something that everybody is used to doing. You had success this year doing that. What's the difference, mentality, whether you're in the lineup, you know you're going to be hitting, you know, maybe four times in a game compared to, hey, it's the eighth inning, grab a bat and get up there?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, man. It's like, even if you have success, I think this might be the first year I've ever had success pinch hitting. But even now, like, I had success this year, but I still think it's hard. It's just one of those things. You guys try to stay as ready as possible. Like, you know, it's stay in the cage, hit, stay loose. But, I mean, it's different, you know, not being in the game as opposed to being in the game. It's a lot different. So it's hard to be as ready, you know, as you are if you're in the game. But and it's just a mindset of being ready from pitch one, I think, as opposed to, you know, whenever you have multiple at-bats, you're like, all right, maybe I can see a couple pitches here. But, you know, whenever you're in there and you got one at-bat, you know, you got to be ready for pitch one. So, you know, look for a good pitch to hit and try not to miss it.
What was the reaction in the dugout when Chris Sale came in to pitch the eighth inning?
I think we were all like, hell yeah, you know, we're in this thing to win it. So, you know, I think that was kind of a thing that Sale and AC and the you know, and Dana and the staff kind of talked about, and Chris Sale wanted to do it. And I mean, if you've got a 3-run lead and you need 6 outs and you've got Chris Sale and Craig Kimbrell, you feel pretty good about it. So, you know, you see him come in and you're like, okay, this is good. This is good right here. So anytime he's on the mound, you feel pretty confident, you know, as a guy on his team. So I think everyone was pretty pumped to see that.
I got to ask you this question before we let you go. The kids at the Jimmy Fund Clinic designed some sweet cleats for you with the good folks at New Balance. They let you wear them for childhood cancer awareness. Don't you get to trot those babies out again?
Yeah, no, I wore them that one day. I didn't even play, and I came in and pinch hit, and I wish I would have hit one of my pinch hit homers that day, but I ended up striking out. So swinging a miss on those. But it was such a cool thing that we were you know, we were able to do with the patients of the Jimmy Fund. And I, you know, I got a few extra pair and sent some to some of the kids and signed them. So it was a pretty cool moment, pretty cool thing that New Balance helped me out with. And hopefully we raised some money to help out.
I will tell you that I've got a pair. I went online and bought a pair without the cleats, obviously.
Yeah, they're sharp.
And the kids did a heck of a job for you on those things.
They did. They're colorful, aren't they?
We
went through probably, I mean, it took us a good while. We kept changing our minds on colors. You know, we'd get to one section of the cleat. I mean, what do y'all want this section to be? And they'd say orange. I'd be like, orange, okay. And then we'd go to a different section. They'd be like, let's do green. And then we'd switch. Then we'd go back to the orange, and we wanted it to be yellow. So, we made them pretty colorful, but they turned out awesome, and it was such a cool thing to be a part of, and you know, be at the Jimmy Fund and have the kids surrounding me and being so involved and excited about making this cleat and being able to wear them on the field was you know, even more special. And then obviously raising the money that we raised to help, you know, to help pediatric cancer was huge. So just a cool all, you know, all around, you know, thing that we were able to do and New Balance helped me out with. So we had a lot of fun with it.
Brock, congratulations on the cycle, on more importantly, the ALDS win, and good luck in the ALCS. We appreciate you taking a few minutes. And thank goodness you didn't get in an accident. You'd never talk to us again.
Yeah, I know, right? That wouldn't be back. Or at least I'd wait till I get to the field to make the call. So, but no, thank you guys for having me. And, you know, like I said, hopefully we can carry that momentum over from the ALDS to this big series against the Astros.
Good luck to you. Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Take care. That is Brock Holt of the Boston Red Sox joining us on his way to the ballpark. Nearly got clipped.
Yeah, he's good, though. He's all right. Safe. Safe right
Thank goodness.
There. Yeah, it can be tricky getting over
Remember
there.
Remember the time, you probably don't, you weren't here then, Terry Francona got in an accident on the phone with us. He was on the phone with us. We were doing our, you know, Michael and I were doing, you know, the manager's
was
thing.
Was he in another city? Was
he
that
was
why?
In Fort Myers.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
And he got rear-ended while he's on the phone with
us. Oh, my God.
And it was like, uh-oh. This is
going to
make noise.
I'll be right back. Yeah, hold on.
It was one of those uh-oh moments, and thank God Brock Holt. He is a guy, one of the texters said, this is a guy who gets it. He does get it, doesn't he?
I would say so, yeah. He definitely does. And you can tell, I mean, it stands out during the Jimmy Fund, but even other times and just how he is with his teammates, like you need those guys. Like to his point, you know, and we've had fun with him throughout the year, and we've had callers call in and defend him and say how great he is. I mean, the reality is, you know, he is – more of a role player. He's more of a utility guy. But when he's out there, he's been making the most of his opportunities. He had a great month of September, which even led me to say, why isn't he playing more? Like, he only played in one game, and he hit for the cycle in the game. Like, he should have been playing more. So I would really expect him to be in there against Verlander. Because also of note, Ian Kinsler, who has a much bigger sample size against Kinsler, or I'm sorry, against Verlander, is not very good. He's hitting like .158. So Brock Holt should start game one. Now, once you get into Cole and Keuchel and everything else, maybe Kinsler plays. Or if you want to go defensive replacement, maybe he does that. But, yeah, Brock Holt is a guy, and you can tell how liked he is by the rest of the team, too. Like, that stands out. And it has been for a number of years like that.
I love how superstitious athletes are.
Especially baseball players. They're nuts.
J.D. saying, Brock, get back in the cage.
Get in there.
Get
in there.
Back in the cage.
So those guys couldn't even watch it. So, and...
I mean, I assume they have TVs down there or something.
They must have TVs. Maybe they were listening to John and Susan. Who knows what they were doing? But they were walking all around and trying to... That inning for those guys must have felt like 5 hours. Like watching Kimbrel walk a guy on four pitches, walk another guy, wild pitch, you know, base hit, and just... That must have been so frustrating for them, especially if you're Holt and Martinez. You're not even in the game. Well, I mean, Martinez isn't in the field.
Right.
And you can't, you have no say in it. You have nothing to do. And you just have to, I guess, pop in and out of the cage and hope they get through it.
He said they're excited to have. Now,
of course he's going to say that. Of course he is. Yes.
You know, he's obviously a great teammate. He's never going to say anything negative about a teammate.
Can you imagine if he was like, oh, terrible decision.
But I will say. When he was in the studio with us at the Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon with David Price, it was pretty clear how close they are.
He loves them. He absolutely loves them. But I think those guys, after so many times, don't they have to know what David Price is in the playoffs? They have to. Like, it's very clear. Like, it's all everybody talks about. Like, even if you try to ignore it, that's one of the main stories. Like, if you pop on MLB Network, if you turn on the radio, if you turn on whatever, that's what you're going to hear. And they've seen it. Like, if you're Brock Holt, even if you're like, hey, I wasn't a teammate with him in Tampa. I wasn't a teammate with him in Toronto or Detroit. You were 2 years ago when he got shelled by the Indians. You were last week when he got shelled by the Yankees. You saw that. Why do you think it's going to change? And they like the guy.
But they always do.
Well, they like
the guy. They always assume, oh, well, he'll be better next time.
Well, they're rooting for a friend, basically.
Yeah,
like, he's a teammate and a friend. So you're not going to count the guy out. But I think in the back of their mind, they have to say, I don't know. Like, I don't know what the analogy would be, but like, if you have a friend who sucks at a certain thing, you're still rooting for him. Like, you're like, yeah, he'll figure it out. He'll get there. He won't. He's not going to.
I hope he does.
Well, of course you
would
do.
Be nice.
Well, now you sound like he does. Of course you hope he does. Everybody hopes that he does, but you definitely can't. You can't feel good about it.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. Lewis is calling from Brooklyn. Hey, Lewis, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how are you?
What's going on?
All right, just taking a shot in the dark here because this is kind of getting fun, like it's a game trying to figure out why I pitched him in game two. But
right.
What if it's more about the Houston starters? I mean, they have legitimate – I look at them as having two number one frontline aces in Cole and Verlander. What if they're pitching Price against Cole thinking, okay, we basically have one number one ace – but then we have like three number threes. So they just throw him against Cole and hope they get the best out of him. If he stinks, they don't have to pitch him again or pitch him out of the bullpen, but they figure maybe they have their three and fours match up better against like Morton and Keuchel and McCullers maybe. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Maybe they try to match up better against those guys there and get wins there. Not that they're going to throw away a game, but they just kind of roll the dice with them and kind of go from there.
Lewis, I do think they take a lot more things into consideration than we do.
Sure.
Your theory is as valid as anything else I've heard. They look at, okay, we think against Verlander, we think Chris Sale gives us the best chance to win. Maybe they're thinking, you know, we think Eovaldi would be better off against McCullers or whoever. You know, they're trying to.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Alex Cora, who's got, you know, inside-out knowledge of the Houston Astros and the way A.J. Hinch is going to run things, he's probably got a pretty good idea of what the pitching rotation is going to be. Maybe he is taking that into consideration.
He might be. I mean, I just think they're loaded. I think 1-4, they stack up better than the Red Sox do 1-4. And I don't care how you jumble them up. You know, I agree with the caller. Verlander and Cole are better and had better seasons than Keuchel and Morton, but those guys are still really good too. I mean, if you were ranking the 8 starting pitchers in the series, I think they have 4 better than everybody but Sale.
I was going to say Sale might be second.
Yeah, Sale's probably second or third, and then it's all the Astros guys, and then it's, you know, Price, Eovaldi, Porcello in some order.
617-779-7937. Bill is in Stoughton. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Dale. How are you?
Very well, thanks. What's up?
Hey, I had a question for you.
Yes.
I want you to let me know if I have a right to be upset. Back in September, I bought four Bruins tickets
for
my children for a birthday present. I work on Saturdays, and they just change it. They don't care about the consumer for TV ratings. Now, I work on Saturdays till 5 o'clock. I called the Boston Bruins office. Mm. They didn't give me any answers. Nothing we can do. That's how it is. They can't let me turn them in for another game. My kids will be heartbroken if I can't get someone to come into work early for me. Huh. What do you say to a guy like myself?
I understand your frustration. In my opinion, what the Bruins should have done is offer you an exchange.
Correct.
We'll allow you to exchange those tickets for, you know, this game or that game.
I agree.
I don't know why they didn't. I don't know who you spoke to. I do think your situation notwithstanding, Bill, I think they did what they did not just for their fans, but, you know, just in general. They don't want to go up against a World Series Game 1. They know that a lot of their fans would like to watch World Series Game 1.
ALCS.
ALCS. They did it for the right reasons, although you got hurt in this case.
Well, absolutely, and it isn't the World Series. It's the first game of a playoff American League championship. I understand that. But they got to look at every corner of it, you know what I mean, and take the fin. The guy that works hard rubs two nickels together, you know, to make it work.
No, I appreciate what you're saying, Bill. And
they should have
offered, they should have
let you exchange those.
Yeah, because you bought a ticket for a 7 o'clock game, right? 7? Was that what it was?
It was 7, yeah.
So
yeah.
You bought a ticket for a 7 o'clock game
because you knew what your work schedule was.
Right.
You knew what your kids' situation was.
It's not like you bought the ticket and said TBD. We're going to wait on the Red Sox, and then it's on you. You bought it for 7, and I agree with Dale. I think most fans, myself included, are glad that they're not head to head. I'm not going to either one, but I'm going to watch both. So,
now you get a chance to see both if you want
to. But I understand there are people like Bill, and I'm sure Bill's not alone. I'm sure there are others that said, hey, great, you know, I can get to the Garden at this time. We're going to go to the game. Now the game starts at 3. Not going to be able to do it. So that's a shame. They should be able to swap them out, especially with all these ticket exchange places. You should be able to get tickets to another game, and then somebody can go in your place.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI. You sat in the studio with us at Fenway Park for the Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon, along with your teammate David Price. And you told us that you think David Price is misunderstood in this town. After his Game 2 performance in the ALDS, many Red Sox fans had sort of said, I don't need to see David Price anymore. He's going to start Game 2 of the ALCS. What will the reaction be in your clubhouse to that?
Excitement. We want him on the mound. And I really feel like he's going to, you know, he's gonna go out and throw the ball like he's capable of throwing. I don't think there's any guy in the clubhouse that's worried about David Price pitching. We want him to throw the ball. He's a huge part of why we've been so good, and he's going to be a huge part of why we get to where we want to be at the end.
Brock Holt, who joined us earlier this hour, talking about David Price, who will pitch Game 2 of the ALCS. Let me clear up a bad scoop I gave you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I gave you a bad scoop.
Bad scoop from Dale?
I gave you the wrong umpires for the ALCS. But don't worry, Angel's still
okay,
not
okay, well, then that's fine. Yeah. Is Country Joe there?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Your umpires Sky. For game one. Yeah. James Hoy is behind the plate.
Love him.
Vic Carapazza is at first.
Vic at first.
Cowboy Joe West is at second.
For the first game, he's going to be behind the plate then at some point.
Yep. Mark Carlson is at third. Chris Guccione is in left. Mark Wegner is in right.
Wegner is a good right field umpire. Fair, foul, et cetera. He's pretty good.
He's got a very definitive foul ball.
Now, I know this isn't an original take, but the left field and right field umpires, useless. Useless
pretty
with
much.
Replay. With replay, useless. Don't need them. If it's close at all, you're going to look at it. They don't need to be there. Get them out of there. What does the left field umpire do at Fenway, by the way?
Yeah, there's not a lot of room there.
Like,
is there?
First of all, you're just in somebody's way.
I mean, so there is some call down in the corner where you might be closer to making the fair and foul call down there.
I suppose. Maybe. But it all goes to replay anyway. So that's good. I thought you were going to tell me something crazy like Angel Hernandez would be umping. Okay.
But now that I've given you the bad scoop, well, I've cleared up the bad scoop on the American League umpires. Now I want to recheck the National League umpires.
Oh, maybe Angel's
maybe
not
Angel's
there.
Not
oh,
there.
That'd be nice. Now, going back to what Brock Holt just said there when you were asking him about David Price.
Yeah.
I do feel like that is a very supportive teammate. It's probably
sure.
a good friend.
Absolutely.
Like that's what that is. And I would expect nothing less from him. But I would have to respectfully disagree when he says, you know, if we get to where we want to be, David Price is going to be a big part of that. I feel like the first series is a great example of how that doesn't need to be the case.
Yep.
They won the series in four games against New York. They put up a 16-run performance in one of the games. David Price pitched an inning and two-thirds. Like, do you know how many pitchers on the Red Sox threw more innings than David Price?
Like I can get you that number.
Been so good, and he's going to be a huge part of why we get to where we want to be at the end.
Nine pitchers got more outs against the Yankees than David Price. Stat of the day, Rossi. That's the stat. Play the sounder. That's the stat of the day.
Do we? Have
no,
a stat
don't play
of
the siren thing. Don't play the siren thing. Don't play the siren thing. That's what you're looking for. I know it. That's the stat of the day. It's a new stat it's a new feature we have called Stat of the Day. And the stat of the day is nine pitchers recorded more outs than David Price, including Eduardo Rodriguez and Heath Hemmer. There it is! Hey! It's your stat of the day.
Is that what that is?
Yep.
David Price also has the worst record, 0-9, as a starter in postseason history, and the second worst ERA, 6.03, as a starter in postseason history.
I'm curious. Do you know who has the worst?
I don't.
Okay. We'll find that out. That'll be the trivia question of the day. Do you have a sounder for that? No. I'm throwing a lot at you here today.
Out of nowhere.
There it is. Trivia question of the day.
He's just hitting any button he can find now.
Like, whatever
here is, that's what you're getting.
What is that? Okay, fine. But my point
I'm going to be able to do the rest of the show. I'm telling you right now. It comes out of my mouth. I'm not going to be able to control myself because I'm barely able to right now.
All right. That's my fault. I asked for any sound and you gave me a sound. Here's the thing though, Dale. You do set yourself up for needing him a little bit more by pitching him in game two.
Yes, harder now to you overcome. Need him in game six.
Yeah, so if he sucks in two out of the six games, you're leaving yourself very little room for error. Now, again, Chris Sale started in one, Evaldi started in one, Porcello started in one. So it can be done, but by throwing him twice in a six-game span, you're making it pretty tough.
617-779-7937. Steve's calling on the truck phone. Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys, how you doing today?
What's going on, Steve?
Keith, I'm going to try to make you feel a little better about Vincent Price. Okay?
Thank you.
I love Vincent Price, especially since it's Dorktober. Go ahead.
Everybody I know, and I don't like the guy, please. I don't want to defend him, but everybody's got a breakout sooner or later. Porcello was, I guess, 11 appearances, and every appearance they lost a game. I just got a funny hunch. I gave you the hunch I had on Sale. The hunch I got on this guy is, though I hate him, I think he's going to go 6 2/3. I really do.
Wow.
He's going to throw about 97 pitches. He's going to strike out seven, and he's going to lead the game with a 4-1 lead. Now, I could be totally wrong. It's just a little. The first three letters of my last name begin with ESP, so I'm delving into that, and that's my synopsis for this game. Hopefully it'll come true, and you'll feel a lot better after that game.
I'd feel better if you had some hard analysis rather than ESP. But,
yeah, you're just kind of throwing it out there a little bit. He's
6 2/3. I'll give him this. It's a very specific
prediction.
It is
6 2/3, 97 pitches, leave with a 4-1 lead.
He even has how many runs they're going to score.
Oh, yeah. You got
4-1. So, yeah, I guess I don't see that happening at all with David Price. And the other thing with Rick Porcello, you're right. He was 0-11, or his team was 11 losses and 11 appearances going into this year for Rick Porcello. But again, I keep going back to the fact that it was four starts. So if you really wanted to look at him and say, all right, well, this guy hasn't been able to do it, that's not a huge sample size. Whereas David Price, it is twice that, or more than twice that, which we've seen him struggle as a starter. So I don't know. I have a really hard time seeing a scenario in which he goes out there, goes 6 2/3 and allows one run. Like, where? Out of where? Out of nowhere.
If all that happened, you'd probably feel pretty good about your chances in this series.
Sure you would, yeah.
If that very specific prediction mm-hmm. came true, and
right.
it's about as specific as you can get. Joe's on the cell phone. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Great.
Hi.
Hey, I got to tell you, first of all, love your show. It's both informative and fun. Thank you, Joe.
How about that?
Question about David Price. You guys alluded to it there, or the previous guy did with Rick Porcello. Dale, wasn't it you yesterday who was giving us a couple of lists of folks who had terrible beginnings of their postseason career?
Well, Randy Johnson especially, yeah.
How much do you think that how negative we all are, and we are, I mean, I don't know anyone who's really excited about, besides Brock Holt, was excited about him pitching in game two.
Right.
How much do you think of that would be different if he was a nice guy, if he had never been a jerk, if he was very humble and just kept going, you know, I'm going to get better, I'm working at it. How much do you think that would change how we feel about things?
I guess we're all hoping that we see this, you know, Randy Johnson-like turnaround.
Yeah.
But why wouldn't we have expected that maybe that would have happened last week or last year?
Right.
Or, you know, I will say in relief last year, and now he didn't start last year, so that's unfair for me to use those. He actually pitched pretty well last year in a relief role, and one of those was against Houston, by the way. He walked off the mound at Fenway Park to a nice ovation in a Houston playoff game last year.
I don't know, obviously, why it hasn't happened yet. And you could go with the argument, well, he's due, and nobody's comfortable with that. But likely, if he does get out of it, whenever it is, hopefully it's game two, doesn't that bode well for the future? Because if it's a mental thing, which we all think it is, then once he breaks through that mental thing, maybe he can relax and start pitching like he had in the regular season. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Maybe.
I mean, I think that, and that's what we were saying going into the Yankee series. But at that point, it had already been a whole bunch of starts, and he hadn't been able to do it. So I do agree with that. But how are you going to hold out hope for that to happen? Like, when on earth is all of a sudden it's gonna click for him, and then he's gonna do it? And by the way, Randy Johnson, I was just looking up Randy Johnson's numbers. He actually won his first ever start.
And then went 10 in a row?
I think it was seven. He lost seven straight games, 2, 4, 6, 7 straight games, and then he turned it around and was the World Series MVP. So he didn't have – he never had a terrible like 8, 9 starts in a row. It wasn't that bad, but he had a bad stretch. 97, 98, 99, he was not very good.
By the way, good news.
Or at least 97, 99, yeah.
Angels not working in the National League either.
Also, where were you getting those from?
A faulty list that I have.
Oh, I also have to. I have something I need to change.
I had to clean that up.
No, I got to clean something up.
Joe West is in your series, and Angel Hernandez is not in any series.
I got to clean something up as well. I read on the internet, and I trust everything on the internet.
If it's real, it's on
this
the internet.
What is this? This is
you finding something on the internet, Sounder?
Got it.
It's a little confusing. Sometimes.
I hoped that Eckersley. I read somewhere that Eckersley was doing the ALCS.
And you made us happy with that news.
I know he's not. It's Ron Darling and Brian Johnson again. Or Brian Anderson.
Oh, no.
Yeah. More Ron Darling. Just Ron Darling. It's a shame, really.
That's it?
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure.
We don't get to have him back?
No. What if Eckersley did the games like on pay-per-view? How much money would you pay?
Probably pay a buck.
I'm in for a buck. I'm in for a buck to enhance the game.
So do we know, is Eck now done? Is that it?
Yeah, who's got the NLCS? Because the ALCS is on TBS, so that's why you're getting the exact same crew. Do we know who does TBS get both? I don't know.
Yeah, we know TBS has the Red Sox.
This information. Oh, Fox Sports 1.
Well, then you're not going to get you're not getting Eck there.
Yeah, it looks like so Friday maybe, night game one.
Unless they move him into the studio for the studio show before the game on TBS.
Mm.
I think they have used him in the studio in the past.
Why can't they throw a 3-man booth?
I don't know.
Why won't they do that? That's really upsetting, isn't it? It's a lot better than just Brian Anderson and
Ron Darling.
Yeah.
Do Red Sox fans assume Ron Darling will be rooting for the Astros as they assumed he was rooting for the Yankees?
Yeah. That's true. I don't know what's his New York bias in Houston is going to be a little bit of a tougher sell.
Don't we assume that the New York bias means anybody but Boston?
Oh, yeah. That'll work.
Probably does.
Play that out.
617-779-7937. Chris on the cell phone. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up, Chris?
Good. Hey, Keith. Big fan of the hashtag dork.
Nice.
The one about the New England beers. And don't sleep on Connecticut Valley Brewing Company, man.
All right.
Some good stuff. I think
won't sleep
like.
On it. All right. Thank you, Chris. Right. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Anyway, yeah. So my point was kind of similar to the last caller. Obviously, we know David Price does not have a good track record in the postseason, but also against the Yankees in general. So I'm wondering how much of this start in the next series is an effort to sort of boost his confidence. It's not the Yankees. Obviously, it's a much more difficult team to face in pretty much every way. But like the last guy said, I mean, if he can beat these guys, maybe it helps him in the future. I wanted to see if you guys thought that had any weight or what.
Well, I mean, maybe I assume he had faith that he was going to win in the last series too.
Yeah, I mean, sure, I'll go down that road. If he pitches well, maybe that'll help him pitch well later on because he will get his first win as a starter.
As a starter,
that's got to help.
Got a couple of wins as a reliever, as he's pointed out.
We'll let you know.
Yeah,
that.
He's brought that up on a couple of occasions.
Yeah, so sure, but okay, he could also pitch well, like. I don't know. Don't you think he has just as good of a chance as pitching well in game two as in game four? But game four, you sort of limit how much damage he can do to you because it would only be the one start. That's how I view it.
I mean, we're probably making more of a deal about this than they are within the Red Sox clubhouse, not only just based on Brock Holt's positively sunny assessment of David Price's possibilities, but my guess is that when Alex Cora and his staff put together the plan for this series, they had, you know, 17 reasons why this was the best way to go, and he told OMF one of them yesterday.
Yeah, and
that
the
was
one.
The height of the left field wall.
Pretty much,
apparently.
Yeah.
pretty much covered it.
He's like, oh, well, the wall here at Fenway can be like another defender, and we can limit these guys to a lot of loud singles instead of home runs, which they would be at the juice box.
617-779. By the way, there was another quick internet thing out there.
Oh, I love the internet.
That said, because everything there is real, that said Alex Cora was being intentionally disrespectful when he told OMF he couldn't remember the name of the ballpark.
You know
what he was saying? Was it
was.
Minute Maid? Is it Minute Maid? Because it used to be Enron.
Enron. It's not Enron anymore.
No. I mean, he was, you know, the bench coach. Last year,
I think
he likes Houston. He actually pointed out to me, I was down there in Houston when they played. He said, I lived right there. He showed this apartment building literally across the street outside the left field wall.
He should know it's Minute
Maid. I mean, he lived in that apartment building and, you know, walked downstairs and into the ballpark to go to work every day.
So you think they're using that as bulletin board material?
Hey!
He doesn't know the name of the stadium!
No, it's Minute Maid! I'm guessing that probably wouldn't fire too many people up.
Probably not.
617-779-7937. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI. Because I seem to be the bearer of bad tidings, I'll give you one more piece of not-so-great news
Downer
today.
Downer Dale over
here. That's my job, apparently.
Jeez.
So yesterday, Patriots practice, Sony Michel was among the players who were listed as limited participation.
Yeah, they had a whole pile of guys.
So today they had essentially a walkthrough. Sweatpants, you know, no helmets, no pads, nothing. He didn't even do that.
Oh,
he was on
boy.
The exercise bike on the sideline.
Big James White game?
Well, I mean, think about...
Only James White game?
I mean, they re-signed Kenyon Barner.
Right.
So, I mean, Sony Michel can't go. I thought the biggest advantage the Patriots had going into this Kansas City game was being able to run the ball.
Yeah, that's
too bad. And the guy who runs the ball best for the Patriots is Sony Michel.
Ugh.
I mean, James White is a great receiving back. I know he says he can do everything. He can run between the tackles and all that.
But they don't think so.
No, they seem to like Sony Michel more in that.
Yeah. They don't give the ball to James White. They don't hand it to him more than twice a game, it feels like.
And so now, if Michel can in fact not go.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, but that's not good. I mean, it was funny. Just yesterday, we were asking Tommy Curran, can they get through the season with just two running backs? And he was even like, no.
No.
No, you need more. And even years past, you always had Brandon Bolden. Nobody was excited about Brandon Bolden, but there'd be a game where you could at least give him the ball a few times and he'd hold on to it and get 3 yards a carry or whatever. Don't even have that. So it's just James White, just Kenyon Barner.
Didn't Kenneth Farrow sign him to the practice squad? Yeah. I don't think Mike Gillisley has signed anywhere yet.
Oh, is that right?
There was some talk maybe that perhaps the Patriots would be interested in bringing him back. If, in fact, Michelle is unable to go, then I think they'd probably be even more interested in bringing Mike Gillisley back.
It makes sense.
Would know the plays, would know what was going on here, get up to speed quicker.
Could be a pass it 45 times, 50 times type of game, too.
It might be.
If that's your alternative, you can't, force it. Even if it is Gillisley, you don't want to give him the ball 15 times. There's a reason he's a free agent. There's a reason you caught him.
There's a reason he's not on a team right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, so. And I'm not saying Michel will not be able to go. He had limited participation yesterday. Today, guys who were down there said while the team was doing the walkthrough, he was on the sidelines on the exercise bike.
Yeah, that's a tricky one because you could probably talk yourself into either way. You're like, well, it was just a walkthrough.
Right.
So, hey, why don't you take care of the knee? Or it's, hey, he can't even do the walkthrough. That'd be a terrible sign. But the fact that he was limited
yesterday.
And maybe
by the time the media got ushered out, he hops off the bike and goes back out on the field. But everybody was on the field except him during the portion of the practice that the media was watching.
But the one thing we have seen already this year was guys can miss a couple of days of practice, but as long as they're there on Friday and at least limited, they can play. Like Rob Gronkowski, for example, I know it was a short week, that Thursday, but he missed a real practice and he also missed that fake practice. So they put him on the list as missing 2 days. Then he was limited. Then he played and he actually looked pretty good. So maybe that's the case with Sony Michel. I mean, so tomorrow will be a pretty clear indication on whether or not he can go or not. Like, if he misses tomorrow's altogether, then, yeah, it's going to be the James White, Kenyon Barner show, I would guess.
Mm-hmm. Part of the reason, by the way, that I don't think they like to run James White is they don't want him to get hurt.
Yeah, that's probably part of it. I mean,
he gets a little touchy. You probably noticed when we suggest
that. Oh, he does not like that.
No.
He wants to do what's best for the team, but he also wants you to know that he can do whatever.
He can run between the tackles.
Whatever. Yeah.
They seem to like Sony Michel better between the tackles, just saying.
They really do. No, they definitely do. I'm going to look up what James White's career high is for
carries.
For carries in a game.
I bet it's not very many.
I would agree with you on that. This year, the high is 8. He had 8 carries against Miami.
That's more than I even would have expected.
Last year, never broke double. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Last year, opening night against Kansas City in that loss to Kansas City, he had 10. That's the high water mark to this point. Yep, year 3, nothing that's good. Yeah, so if he runs the ball, and like Sony Michel immediately is getting more carries than that. So they're much more. Yeah, so he's only had double-digit carries once in his entire career. And if you take Sony Michel's, what do you have, 25 carries or whatever it was last week? You take that out, and if you want to run the ball, you're not going to give Kenyon Barner 10 or 12. So that could limit them. I mean, and not to say they can't win the game passing. The one good news is Kansas City's defense is below average. So they should be able to score
and
regardless.
And as we covered earlier this week, they can't tackle.
Tom
Curran brought that up yesterday. They are a poor tackling team. Now, offensively, they can light you up.
Yeah. But it is amazing when you think about it. They start the year, they go into training camp, and you have James White, Rex Burkhead, Jeremy Hill, Mike Gillisley, and James White. So you start the year with those 5 guys. And Sony Michel, we don't know if he can't play yet, but he missed the first 2 games of the season. Burkhead's on IR, Jeremy Hill's on IR, and you cut Gillisley. So it's like, it's amazing how quickly it goes from, oh, that's a pretty deep position. In fact, you had to cut Gillisley in order, just because they didn't have room for him on the roster, and now you're looking around the league seeing, who's on somebody's practice squad, trying to add another body.
Are you feeling, taking this move out, leaving Sony Michel out, are you more or less confident as the week has gone on about Sunday night?
I've, Well, I feel actually pretty good. I think the last couple of weeks have made you feel better about where the Patriots are at. Like, I do feel like the offense should be able to score a bunch of points. I think the defense, you know, again, it was a good first half effort. And
every time I see Kansas City, you know, offensively, yeah. I think they're going to score 50 against the Patriots. Yet, take a look at the numbers for Patrick Mahomes the last 2 weeks. Pretty pedestrian.
Yeah.
I mean, now, he started out like a house of fire.
No, he started out ridiculous. Like, it just started out silly. But, yeah, he can do a lot of things. It's going to be fun to watch him, you know, for an entire game because he could chuck the – he's got maybe the best arm in the league. He's also pretty elusive, and he's accurate. He's got, what, one pick so far? And for a guy as a first-year starter to only have one interception, I don't care how easy they've made the rules. That itself is still pretty impressive. But you look at the last couple of matchups, they've dominated the Patriots. Like regular season, week one last year, going back to 2014, they've absolutely dominated them. So I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be a shootout. I think the offense will certainly live up to their end of the bargain. I don't know how the defense is going to do.
Here's Mahomes' five games so far this year. Week one, he goes 15 for 27, four touchdowns, no interceptions, quarterback rating of 127.5.
Yeah, good start.
Week two, 23 for 28, six touchdown passes, no interceptions, quarterback rating of 154.8.
He had more touchdown passes than incompletions in that game.
Think about that for a minute.
That's ridiculous.
Week three, 24 for 38, three touchdowns, no interceptions, quarterback rating of 115.5.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get to the last two games. Week four, Denver, 28 for 45, one touchdown, no interceptions, quarterback rating 89.5.
He had a rushing touchdown, I want to say, in that game, too. And didn't he bring him back in the fourth quarter? Like, so that was one where the fantasy...
He did have a rushing touchdown.
Yeah, so the fantasy numbers were the worst in that game, but that also said a lot about him. Is that the one that was in Denver? Does that say there?
In Denver.
Yeah, so he came back. Like, so
he won 27-23.
Yeah, and it was a fourth quarter comeback. So he didn't have the gaudy stats, but he showed you could count on him late in the game.
Last week, against a very good Jacksonville defense, obviously, they win pretty easily 30-14. He's 22 for 38. No touchdowns, two interceptions, quarterback rating of 62.7.
Oh, so two picks. Okay, so he had two picks in the game.
Now, he also had a rushing touchdown in that game.
Right.
So the last two games, he's had two rushing touchdowns. But you take a look, in the last two games combined, he's had one touchdown.
They're obviously 5-0, so I mean, it doesn't matter who they were playing there. But Jacksonville, I still think, is one of the best teams in the AFC. And so he's able to beat them. The game against Denver, I don't think the Broncos are a great team, but it's a division rival, and you know they were trailing in the fourth quarter, and he came back to win. So the first 3 weeks of the season, he was the unanimous MVP. Like through four, probably still the MVP. Even now, I think if the voting came out after 5 weeks, he's got to be the MVP. I mean, maybe Jared Goff, maybe Todd Gurley. There's a few guys on the short list, but he's still there. And so this will be a big game for him too. How does he bounce back from, you know, his first two interceptions of the season? Also, Sunday night game in New England. Like, that's a pretty big test. Everybody's
cool, not frigid, but it's going to
We're
more worried about David Price pitching Sunday night than Patrick Mahomes playing Sunday
yeah,
night.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to be fine. But a lot of people want to make this out to be a AFC championship preview. But the reality is we don't know. We have no idea what the Chiefs are going to be in the playoffs yet. Like, they could still be the same team. I know they have a different quarterback.
No, this is the point in the season where generally they turn back into a pumpkin.
They could but even then they still finished 11-5 or whatever. Like, they're still good.
Look at this. They're going to blow the doors off the rest of the league.
And then they come back down to earth. But they, and we talked about this, I remember last year after week one, and I was never a big Alex Smith fan, but if you look at that team, they have what has become a real number one receiver. They have a real number one tight end, and they have a real number one running back. And then even their complementary receivers aren't bad. Not a lot of teams have that. Like, if you look at some teams, they're lacking the good tight end because there's probably only a handful of really, really good ones. Or they're lacking the running back that can run and catch passes. Or they're lacking something. They seem to have everything offensively. So it's going to be by far the biggest test for the Patriots defense. Patriots offense, meanwhile, they've already faced a few defenses better. So I would expect them to light it up.
Who is going to be able to cover, like, let's just say for the sake of argument, Kareem Hunt? out of the backfield.
Yeah, I don't know. Cassius Marsh after last year. No, they...
Who's going to be able to cover Tyreek Hill?
I wonder, I mean, do you go Gilmore there? I mean, that's not a great matchup. I mean, Hill's
Belichick
just such a
was glowing,
burner.
By the way, about Stephon Gilmore yesterday.
Gilmore's been
said
great.
He's playing much, this is his words,
yeah,
much, much better than last year.
I think he is. Now, oh, I think he's playing like he did at the end of last year. Right? The first four games, you thought the guy was lost. You thought he was a bust. You're like, this guy's overpaid. Like, what are they doing with Stephon Gilmore? But then he figured it out. I think he's been their best defensive player through 5 weeks. Don't you think? I mean, first of all,
oh yeah,
because Flowers and Chung missed time due to injury, yeah, and those guys have both been good. But and Hightower started real slow, so Gilmore has been their best guy. So I bet they mix it up. I don't think it's going to be just, hey, Gilmore, you're on Tyreek Hill. I think they do some zone. I think he matches up with Hill a little bit. And then you got Travis Kelce. I mean, that's probably a Patrick Chung situation. Maybe, you know, some of the safeties. You can throw anybody you want at Kelce. The guy's been very productive the last few years.
And by the way, all of those questions that we have about who do the Patriots cover this guy with and that guy with, Kansas City has the exact same questions.
Oh, yeah. No, they definitely
who do they cover Josh Gordon with?
Yeah.
You know, who do they cover Gronk with? Who do they cover James White out of the backfield with?
And Eric Berry has a heel injury, and so he's one guy in the league who can cover Gronk. Like, there might be a handful of guys, maybe not even a handful, there might be two or three in the whole league that can match up with Gronk. And I think Eric Berry is one of them, but he's been dealing with a heel injury.
How many? What's the over-under? You always know this stuff. I'm guessing the over-under must be like 60.
Yeah, it's the highest in the league. It is 59.5. So great guess, Dale. 59
in the
and
ballpark.
Half. Patriots are 3.5-point favorites, at least in one place.
How many?
3.5.
So a half point, basically. You get three points for being at home.
Yeah.
So basically a pick'em game for even though Kansas City comes in undefeated at 5-0.
Right. Exactly.
Patriots are 3-2, but Vegas kind of has it as a pick'em game.
Yeah. I'll give the Patriots-Chiefs pick tomorrow, but I'll definitely take the over right now. Give me the over. Who's stopping who in this game?
I'm not sure anybody stops anybody.
Yeah. So both teams could easily score in the 30s. And then you this might be one where late third quarter they already have the over. It's going to be a pretty clear day. It's not like it's been pouring rain or really windy or anything like that. So this could be just points of what the NFL wants, Dale, like a 49-42 type of game.
Well, apparently that's what they want because that's what they have handed.
Well, that's what they've done, and I don't think it's – how is it going to go the other way? Like, if you're like, fake care about injuries, like you're going to pretend that you care about the health of players, you can't walk some of this stuff back. They've already looked at some of the hits on quarterbacks, and they've doubled down on it. Remember when Clay Matthews was throwing a fit, and they're like, no, we're good. You can, you know, don't land on the quarterback. Don't hit the quarterback. Don't do this. So they want as many points as possible. I wonder if it'll ever get to a point where fans think that, like, it's a bit much. It's a little too arena league. Or do they like it? You know, you play fantasy football, and you love all the scoring.
By the way, I mentioned this to Peter King. If you're looking at quarterback ratings, if you like that particular stat, some people do, some people don't.
Yeah.
Tom Brady, going into this weekend, is 19th in the NFL in quarterback rating. 19th at 96.1.
And by the way, 96.1, if you go back like several years, 96.1 would probably lead the league or close to it.
By the way, he's just behind Eli Manning.
Yeah, he's a good quarterback.
But just to put it in perspective, you leave some of these, you know, weird ones out. But you've got Drew Brees at 122.3, Jared Goff 119.7, Philip Rivers 116.4, Ryan Fitzpatrick still there at 114.4, Patrick Mahomes 112. You've got like half a dozen, eight, nine guys who are in triple digits.
Well, and the one that really jumps out too is completion percentage. And for a while, 60% was kind of the cutoff. Like, if you're below 60, you're kind of a bum. If you're above 60, that was good, right? Right now, there are 30 quarterbacks with a completion percentage over 61%. 30 over 61%. So it's a whole league. And then you have seven guys completing 70 or more percent of their passes. Drew Brees, just under 78%. Of his passes are complete.
Think the game's changed much?
That's ridiculous. Terry Bradshaw completed like 30% of his passes.
And he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, right.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.